Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Now, my welcome to B-Side Stories, Tuesday the 17th on Wellington of February on Wellington Access Radio, Ko Victoria Quaid Aho. Joining me today, I have Margaret Austin. Now, if you are a regular theatre goer, you might know of Margaret Austin because she is a theatre reviewer. If you're into poetry, you also might know of Margaret because she has published several anthologies of her poetry. And coming up in the Fringe Festival, Margaret is performing a one-woman show called Please Adjust Your G-String. Now, originally from Palmerston North, Margaret is now makes Wellington her home, which is one of the reasons that I invited her to be on B-Side Stories, which is interesting people doing interesting things. But she started off as a Sunday school teacher in Palmerston North. So, Margaret, how do you get to go from being a Sunday school teacher in Palmerston North to performing New Zealand Fringe Festival, Wellington's Fringe Festival, one-woman show called Please Adjust Your G-String?
How long have I got?
Well, we're here until 6 o'clock, so we go for it. Tell us the story.
Sunday school teacher and ballet dancer, all the things you're supposed to be when you're born in the late 1940s and you're growing up in Palmerston North. It was lovely. It was a very correct and lovely upbringing, at least by my well-bred, beautiful, refined mother. But you see, there was my father as well. I think perhaps, is it too early to read you a poem about my father?
Well, no. Go ahead. Go.
Well, okay. Look, it's throwing your listeners in, but then it is after 5 o'clock, isn't it? Well, if you didn't know what Haining Street was famous for, Wellingtonians, you're going to learn from this poem, because my dad took opium on Haining Street. It was the 30s. The Chinese made it possible. My dad was a reporter for Truth. How's that for truth?
Truth, of course, if you live in Te Aro, the Truth building is...
It's still there.
It's still there.
I know.
It's now apartments. Yes. It's now converted into apartments. But it was right up until the 80s, they were still published the Truth.
I know. I don't know what happened. It was going strong in my father's day.
Mm-hmm. So your father was a reporter for Truth. For those people who are more recent to Wellington, Truth was a somewhat salacious, wasn't a broadsheet, it was a smaller, broadsheets were the big newspapers, and it was definitely a smaller size newspaper.
Right.
But yes. It was thrived.
It had a wide readership, I should think.
It had a very wide readership. It
gossip.
Thrived on gossip,
yes.
Rumours, innuendo, politicians, celebrities. It was all on, and it was in the Truth. So your father was a reporter for a
Well, trip. Look, I think I'm going to save my father's reputation here. I think he was only a proofreader.
Yeah.
But it's not too different. Shall I finish the poem?
Yes, please.
Just
do
about
finish,
the dad.
Okay. Please do finish the poem.
My dad had a farm. He was really a townie. His khaki shorts hung next to his waistcoat in the wardrobe he shared with his wife. She loved him, tamed him. Is that how it works? He muttered and retreat to the pub. No opium dens in Palmerston North. Raised three kids. Loved cats. Made pirate boxes. Late in life, my dad returned to old haunts, lived in Wellington in a boarding house, died at 70 of beer and cigs. Scribbling this on Haining Street, I am proud to be my dad's daughter.
Aha.
So does that help?
Yes, it does. So that this is part of the story of how Margaret Austin, a Sunday school teacher from Palmerston North, ends up performing in Wellington's Fringe Festival, a one-woman show called Please Adjust Your G-String. But let's go back a little bit. And so you were teaching?
Yes.
You're a teacher? You trained as a teacher?
Yes, I did. And I taught English in a couple of high schools. One of those was in Dunedin. And they gave me the naughty fourth form girls, which I think meant that they saw right through me. The naughty fourth form girls loved me, and I loved them.
Was this because you were a naughty fourth former?
Well, there you go. People will say, is that the girl I knew at school? But she was a head prefect. She got top marks in Latin. What do you do?
So
one side of me was just undeveloped, Victoria. That's
okay,
all.
So the naughty fourth former had yet to emerge.
I suppose so. She took a while too.
Yeah. And now going on one's OE,
yes,
or overseas experience, or OS, overseas, as it used to be, was a rite of passage for New Zealanders. Often after university, they would head to the UK.
Yes.
And find a job, any job, work hard, travel, see as much of Europe as they could, and before coming back.
Yep.
And they usually did it straight after university, but you taught instead.
I did. In fact, I was 29, for goodness sakes, all of 29, when I left on the great OE. Yeah.
And back in the 70s, which was when you left on the OE, flying was very, very expensive, so...
Oh, you didn't even think of flying. No, you took a passenger liner. When I tell teenagers and younger people, much younger than me, that I was on a passenger liner and that it took 6 weeks to get from New Zealand to the other side of the world, they simply don't believe me. Of course, the Angelina Lauro, anyone listening ever been on the Angelina Lauro, the sister ship to the Achille Lauro, Italian ship, and it happened to be full of Italians on my journey who were returning from Australia to Italy. And I spent most of the time fleeing from the amorous Italians.
Avoiding amorous Italians.
Well, they were a bit over the top, gosh.
So was this this Italians returning to Italy to find wives or who'd
Oh, I don't think they were looking at me like that, Victoria. This was just a shipboard romance. It never crossed my mind. They were serious in their flirtation. Uh-huh. Bit late now.
Yeah. All right, so you got to England, and how this was England in the mid-70s?
Yes. London just wasn't all it was. I shouldn't use the expression cracked up to be. There was just something missing for me. I couldn't quite name it. I mean, it was still the same language spoken for a start. Well, that should have been something I was thankful about. But somehow it was all... And, of course, it wasn't familiar, and yet it sort of was. And I think I subconsciously wanted something just a bit more, well, challenging is one word that comes to mind. And then when I crossed the channel on a ferry, none of this under-the-sea stuff, and got to Europe, I immediately thought, now this is it. Not the same language, different culture, don't know anyone, you know. Yeah. No one to tell me, I don't think you should do that. Well, or you can't do that. I'm shocked that you're doing that.
Let's let's have a break and we will get started on your European adventures and misadventures in a moment. You're listening to B-Side Stories on Wellington Access Radio, 106.1 FM. B-Side Stories is one of Wellington Access Radio's Community Zone programs every weekday from 5 to 6. Each program has a slightly different focus or bent. And B-sides is interesting stories from interesting people. And today's show, I selected another one dynamic one woman, or she actually plays in a duo now, Jan Preston. Jan Preston, for many, many years, if you were around Cuba Street and went to the Bristol, you would have heard Jan. She had a regular gig there. She's now based in Sydney, and so we don't get to hear her that often. She is coming to Wellington, back to New Zealand in March. But this is from Jan Preston's Wild Mood Swings, and she's has a great jazz blues voice.
I'm good at chess, not frightened of death. I faced a serial killer and it came off second best. The basics of trigonometry, I understand. I can't go right at your breaks with my bare hands. I've seen the three sisters, I can ride a bike. In the middle of the night. There's only one thing chills my heart. I'm scared of the dark. Traveled to China, wrestled with the bear. Stood up to my mother when my big brother wasn't there. I told my accountant where to get off, and I bought the corporations that didn't do their job. Scream when I was giving birth. There's only one thing chills my heart. I'm scared of the dark. Tree. I know the square root of 103. I'm essentially attractive. I can sing in tune at a party on my own. I know how to work the room. I can't speak in tongues. I don't need my mom. Can't hold a conversation with just about anyone.
Hey, can someone turn the lights off? I can't see what I'm doing. Yeah.
Jan Preston and Scared of the Dark from Wild Mood Swings. Now, I'm talking to someone in the Wellington Access Radio studios who is not scared of the dark. I'm talking to Margaret Austin, the Sunday school teacher from Palmerston North, who went on her OE when she was 29, travelling by passenger liner to reach the UK, but got to the UK and was a little bit disappointed because although it was different, it wasn't that different. And so she decided to take the ferry across the channel, and you ended up in Paris. So tell us, we're waiting, what happened in Paris?
Well, you wouldn't dream about it. I did start out the Grand Tour in Paris and then did the Grand Tour of Europe and sort of returned.
So you started in Paris, and where did you travel?
Well, okay, it's probably most important to mention Amsterdam, which I hadn't told you preceded Paris. So I'd better spend a little bit of time letting you know what Amsterdam freed me from. Is that a thing to say? Freed me from. Go on. Yeah.
Oh, so I got it wrong. So you crossed the channel.
Yes.
You crossed the channel, went to Amsterdam first.
Amsterdam was first up.
And Amsterdam was sufficiently different from Palmerston North and Dunedin and Wellington.
North from south. Yeah. I'm not sure what Amsterdam is like now. I do hope it's still the blast of a place that it was for me. I'll never forget walking sort of slap bang into the middle of the red light district shortly after my arrival at the station. It isn't far away. And I looked up and here was this woman with a short skirt and being lit from behind with this bright, bright pink light. And she was knitting. I mean, she was sitting there, short skirt on, waiting and knitting. And on one side was a grocer's store and on the other side a dairy. And the whole thing was suddenly framed totally differently for me because this looked, I hesitate to use the word normal, but this was obviously what went on. And it took me 4 years to be exposed to normality in Amsterdam. And I fell in love with it. It was extremely confronting. And I found I liked that. I liked being confronted, just smacked in the face with, well, you might think you know how things work and what's okay and sort of what's not really okay, but look what we can show you here.
So what you say 4 years. What were the 4 years?
75 to 79.
And that was when you were in
Amsterdam.
Amsterdam.
Yes.
Amsterdam.
Yes.
And you found work easily or?
Yes. Waitressed, as you do. More importantly, I found a bunch of friends who were Americans. And now a shout out to any Americans who are listening. Thank you so much for the way that you guys are. Because you, few of you, took me by the hand and said, look, we're going to go such and such and so, and it's going to be fun. So why don't you come with us? So that was the theme.
The reserved young woman from Aotearoa fell in with a bunch of gregarious, open-hearted Americans.
Yes, indeed.
And in Amsterdam.
In Amsterdam, yes.
And
they
surrounded.
Took me by the hand, metaphorically, and led me in all the places you can go to in Amsterdam where I was safe, wide-eyed, but safe.
I think that's a really big thing, that feeling of, particularly as a woman travelling by herself. I know. I travelled when I was 20 by myself. Mm. Unfortunately, I did not fall in with a gang of generous Americans, and sometimes I felt very unsafe in places.
I can imagine. Yeah.
So you waitressed. You met people. You had made friends.
Yes.
So then, what took you? How did you end up in Paris?
Well, there was a year in Athens in the middle of those two best cities, which did not go well. In fact, to be fair, after all the liberal life of Amsterdam, to go to a place like Athens, Greece, in 1979 was much more of a challenge than I realised I was up to or up for. Which preposition shall I use? I couldn't go out on the streets at night without being followed and someone, a man, coming up alongside and saying, well, the Greek expression for where are you going is popane. Somehow it was far more seductive than, it was sort of like, where are you going, as opposed to where are you going? Anyway, I wasn't to be seduced, not on the street or anywhere else, but I didn't enjoy Athens for that reason.
Really interesting, because 1979 or 1978 was the year I travelled,
and I
didn't go any further south than France because I started to feel unsafe.
Is that right? Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so Athens really didn't agree with me, as they say, so I took off west, and next up was Paris, big challenge. If Amsterdam was sort of unisex, and Greece was definitely masculine. Here was, I hope still is, a city for women. It feels very feminine. It's not just the beautiful women on the street. It's the whole city. It seems feminine. Maybe that's a silly word to use, but that's how it struck me after what I'd been through. So I responded to that, and well, I'm not going to talk about my main story, which forms part of my little show. Please, just
give us a hint.
I shall give you a hint. What kind of hint shall I give you? Well, Paris was challenging. What are you here for, and who the heck are you anyway? Said Paris to me. And I thought, right, what's the craziest thing that I could think of to do, being a woman and having long legs and having a bit of ballet training? Well, dance training. So I did something I don't think anyone else in New Zealand has done. But you'll have to see my show to find out what it was.
All right.
But I ended up in a very special place, a famous place, a show place, show business place. And
Not everybody listening is going to be able to go to your show. So do give us a little bit more because I promise you, I know the story a little bit. And I'm still going to go see the show.
Okay.
Because it's getting it delivered by you in the show is a totally different experience.
That's true. I theatricalize it.
So you went to Paris and you
I got a tip off from a barman when I said that I was looking for work and that I was looking for dance work. And his response was, well, I happen to know that they're looking for girls at the Folies Bergère, which is the most famous music hall in Paris.
And so you auditioned.
I there and then decided that's what I was going to do in Paris. And I ended up doing that. For the full story, listeners, you know what to do.
You have to come to Margaret's Fringe show. So that was one. So how long were you with the Folies Bergère?
Well, it was actually only a couple of years, ultimately. Reason, it was a little bit on the mechanical. Ultimately, it's mechanical. I mean, I wasn't a star there. I was, you know, in the chorus line. It's a mechanical thing. Pose, smile. So I wanted a bit more than that. A bit, you know, more liveliness.
You actually got a bit bored with it.
Yeah. Yes. People might be surprised to hear that, but and in the meantime, I'd met a writer. Mark was one of these impassioned Americans. Over here doing there. Who was the American guy? Was it Ernest Hemingway? All the others, you know, all the guys who came to Paris because you had to if you were an American and you wanted to be a writer. And he helped me. He suggested markets for articles and suggested that I interview celebrities. So I got on the celebrity trail and, yeah, I tracked down celebrities, which was an interesting thing in itself. Which nightclubs did they go to? And I hung around there.
So
and
now
sometimes
we,
I agreed to, they agreed to an interview by
so
me.
So now we go go full circle because the daughter of a reporter of Truth.
You might say. From good old dad.
Your dad, who was a reporter for Truth.
Yes.
A fairly salacious gossip magazine or gossip newspaper.
And here am I.
And then you find yourself in France and someone suggests you do a bit of reporting writing.
All thanks to dad. Yeah, I can remember him. He scribbled his stories in the 60s on those pieces of thick foolscap in thick black pencil, dictated the stories over the phone to the office in Wellington. And here was I, you know, in nightclubs in Paris saying, oh, is that Christopher Reeve? Oh, boy, yeah, okay, yeah. Oh, God, someone knows where Anthony Hopkins is hanging out. Yeah, okay.
And so from your stint as a dancer, and that got you into the clubs knew the clubs.
Well, I did a bit of nightlife and I did kind of know some of the places to go.
And you knew, so you got to started doing celebrity writing.
Yes, and sold the odd story to, well, not the odd story, like a few stories to magazines, obviously English-speaking magazines in England. I actually went to London and tried to get a few contacts and someone said to me, then why don't you write some celebrity stories for my women's magazine? I forget the name, I think it was called She, out of publication now, and they would publish my any stories that I got.
But you stayed based in Paris.
I stayed based in Paris while doing that.
All right, we're going to take another Jan Preston break. Okay. This one, as I thought, was another appropriate song, and it's called "I Was Young Once."
Your girl's mind was out there. I didn't listen, no, I didn't want to hear, cause I was young once. I know how it feels. Your sister's turning nine and your heart's broken for the first time. You think we don't know anything, you think mothers are dumb. It's inconceivable.
That was Jan Preston with I Was Young Once from Wild Mood Swings, a re-release. You're listening to B-Side Stories on Wellington Access Radio, Coal Victoria, Quater Hole. And I'm talking to Margaret Austin. And welcome again to the studio, Margaret.
Thank you.
And we are tracking Margaret's evolution from a Sunday school teacher in Palmerston North to a performer in a one-woman show in the upcoming Fringe, or the Fringe that's already started. And the one-woman show is called Please Adjust Your G-String. And I'm going to it, definitely, because I have seen its companion piece, which is Have You Seen My G-String? And that was truly hilarious and a wonderful piece of entertainment, very, very enjoyable. And I'm not always a big fan of that sort of genre, the comedy autobiographical combination. But Margaret, you carry it. You're something else. So, Margaret, you are in Paris. You're supporting yourself with a bit of celebrity writing. You were dancing for the Folies Bergère, but you stopped doing that. Still did a bit of performing, and then you decided to return to Amsterdam.
That was the late-ish 80s. Gosh, six or so years in Paris with all of those wonderful experiences in that very, very female city. I thank her for that. Yeah. But Amsterdam still called, and I realised I had a book inside me. I would love to tell readers about my Amsterdam experiences. So back I went to Amsterdam, got a few jobs ultimately in teaching. Actually, there was an English kids school I think I got work at. I taught a bit of English, which is a time-honoured thing to do too when you're overseas. And at the same time, I wrote the manuscript for Amsterdam Affair. And I sent it to a publisher in New Zealand, and he said, "This is wonderful. We'll be publishing it." And so when I set off back to New Zealand, I expected that the book would be out, or I'd be launching the book or something, only to be met virtually at the airport by the wretched publisher. Well, it was a new publisher, that the original publisher had left and been promoted to Australia, and the new one did not like the book and said, "We're not going to publish it unless you rewrite it." Shock, horror. I'd expect to breeze in like a star, launch a salacious book and be gone again. I had to stay and do a rewrite job, which actually I'm very thankful for, because the very assiduous editor at this publication house, which doesn't exist anymore, by the way, did a very good job on the galley proofs. Listeners may not know what galley proofs are. Before the digital times, galleys were long sheets of paper with your whole book printed out on them for you to check. And this editor had marked the parts that didn't belong with an arrow to where they did belong. In other words, it was a restructuring. What was wrong with the book, she said, and which I finally understood, it needed restructuring. And she had done it for me by marking up the galley proofs, sent them to me, and then I spent some time, a couple of months, rewriting the whole book, taking on board her restructuring advice.
So this was not a career that you had actually planned on being,
not
you know, writing.
No,
Your writing that you did in Paris, which was celebrity short pieces,
yes,
and features.
True. Yeah,
and then you wrote a book that needed to be restructured.
Yes.
But you've been writing ever since.
I have. That's true. I'd been bitten by the bug, if that's the expression. Very happy to be bitten, I can tell you. And that little book eventually was published. And listeners may find copies of Amsterdam Affair in secondhand bookshops. That's where you find them.
And possibly the library as well. And you also wrote poetry. You gave us a poem at the beginning of the show, which was your father, and about your father, who was a reporter, proofreader for The Truth.
Yes, but he was a journalist.
A journalist. Mm. And so you started writing poetry at the same time? Or?
That's a very good question. I did actually start to write poems in Greece because I was angry. We won't go into why I don't like calling myself a feminist, but other people would say, "This was the beginning of you as a feminist. Come on, girl."
Yeah.
I sat and wrote angry poems on white paper tablecloths. And when the waiter came to take them away, I would snatch my latest poem from him. So this book, I don't want to read one because there are angry poems in there. But that was the 1980s when I started writing poetry. But that got accelerated back here in New Zealand, when I found there was plenty to write about. And in the anthology that I brought with me, just in case I might read a poem or two, is full of social commentary. I'm not sure, in fact, if any other poet, hey, correct me if I'm wrong out there, anyone please, who wrote about the protest in the Parliament grounds that lasted for 3 weeks. I wrote half a dozen poems. I was there most days, listening, watching what was going on there. And wrote poetry about. So my poems are, you know, I've got one about Facebook, which is the one a light-hearted one I might read you.
Okay,
so
well,
that's what I've kind of that's what I'm doing now. I'm making social commentary.
Give us a poem. The poem about Facebook.
The one about Facebook. Okay, this one.
Because
is,
the,
this
the
one
ubiquitous
is
ubiquitous Facebook and the algorithm, which drives you crazy.
Of course,
but it does connect you to other people. And
I'm going to write a poem about the algorithm one of these days, and I'm going to picture the algorithm as a very ugly little octopus-like creature. Anyway, here is a poem. It's a short one, more or less, called Is Heaven on Facebook? I thought death was a thing benign, but what say dead people are online? Just think of all the updates, requests, messages, and emotional states. If they posted, how'd that be? Would we learn that they're all at sea, or would they be sending notifications to friends and enemies and all their relations? What say they made a friend request? Now that would really be a test. It could be just a lucky chance, perhaps to do with a séance. And hey, maybe, what dread thought, if heaven's online, then ought not hell? Now that would really not be swell. Facebook may its fans delight, incite to talk and sometimes fight, but if we're thinking paradise, do we need that extra spice? And if we want to rest in peace, Facebook, like us, will have to cease.
Well, I think some people would say that there's definitely hell online. Especially with so much of what is online, it is now become hard to say: is this an actual thing or
yes,
is this a created thing?
Or an AI thing? Whatever.
You can often recognize AI style, but I'm finding it very, very frustrating to read yet another ChatGP or AI article. I'm interested in the content,
sure,
but the artificiality of the writing,
you don't
totally
appreciate.
Yeah, totally gets in the way, and they're often they're often far too long. A lot of very repetitive, and
too long. When it's on screen, it's not something.
And
you want to get into
quite didactic style, which is another thing I'm not that fond of.
Yeah.
So all right. So that was you on Facebook. Give us another one. Give us another poem.
What about my one about Tinder?
But definitely Tinder.
On Tinder.
On Tinder. And then I have a song from Jan Preston that will go with that beautifully.
Alrighty. Here's me talking to an imaginary Tinder date. You want a Tinder date? Okay, mate, let's have at it. Let's ignite by swiping right. What puerility, such a comment on virility. Let's meet and converse, find out how perverse you are. Let's repair to a bar so you can tar me with your feathers. Then let's head to bed so you can singe me with trumped-up passion. Give me a reluctant orgasm and then ask me for another date. To which a yes is to confess that in Tinder world it's always less than what you really wanted. And you know what follows from a date on Tinder? Yeah, right. Only a cinder.
Ah, that's brilliant, Margaret. This is Margaret. I'm talking to Margaret Austin, and she is reading from an anthology of her work, which is called Poems Without Borders, which is very apt because we're talking about we're crossing borders with Margaret's travels in Europe. I'm going to take another Jan Preston break with a song that does relate directly to that last poem.
I want a little sugar in my sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving or some pain.
I feel so funny, I feel so sad. Yes, I want to let her steam on my clothes. Well, maybe I could fix things up some ago. What's the matter? Some sugar in my bowl. Yeah, I want to let them steam on my clothes. Well, maybe I could fix things up some ago. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, say.
Wonderful blues from the wonderful Jan Preston, who will be performing in March, late March, at the Vogelmorne Community Bowling Club. It's in Vogelmorne, and look it up because it's really going to be worth going to see. You're listening to B-Side Stories on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. B-Side Stories is one of Wellington Access Radio's community radio shows that features people doing things in Wellington and the Hutt and theatre in the theatre world, and conversations with interesting people doing interesting things, which is B-Side Stories, the stories of people who make Wellington tick. I'm talking to Margaret Austin, who returned to Wellington in the late 80s, initially thinking she was just going to be flying through before returning to Europe, where she had made a life for herself in Amsterdam and Paris, but ended up staying in Wellington and making a life for herself here. So, Margaret, after you finished editing your book and the book was launched and published, you decided to stay. And you had been writing celebrity pieces while you were in Paris, and you got a job as a proofreader for the Dominion Post.
Very humble, yes. Proofreading it on an easel, you know, hard copy, which I still liked. Using proofreading symbols, I did like that, yeah. But, you know, New Zealand after Europe and all those adventures, well, I hate to use the word boring, but I did think to myself, well, what adventures can I have here? And of all things, listeners will gasp with surprise or something, I joined a Toastmasters club. Oh, yes, I can see your faces. It's a conservative thing to do.
It is. Yes,
but it's wonderfully useful.
It is particularly if you are wanting to improve your communication skills and make contacts. It's a wonderful.
If I hadn't joined my Toastmasters club, I doubt if I would be on stage, you know, with my show, you know, knowing how to at least to project that sort of thing. But the best thing about joining a Toastmasters club is that I met Anthony, the Duke of Wellington. Now, those of you who are listening will, I'm sure many of you will remember the dashing Duke Wellington once enjoyed with his scarlet jacket, his bicorn hat, and his own army. This man.
One of Wellington's many characters and personalities.
Was he ever?
They well, come and yes. The thing is people now think that it's all, that the fringe is new. Well, no, yes. Wellington has had a long history of interesting characters.
Street theatre, you might
street
say.
Street theatre yes. before yes. the fringe. But indeed. you met the Duke, the self-styled Duke of Wellington.
I did, indeed.
And became... Yes. The
well,
Duchess.
We were a romantic pair. We fell in love, and Tony gave me a beautiful romantic courtship full of surprises, and eventually he asked me if I would like to be the Duchess, and it was Fran Wilde who made me official. So Michael Fowler made Tony official in 1980. I became officially a Duchess in the early 90s. Now, you know, people would ask me, well, are you a real Duchess? And I would say, well, hang on. I mean, I'm middle class like Kate, and I'm divorced, because I was, like Camilla, and I'm an actress like Meghan. So, you know, with me, you've got three rolled into one.
A uniquely New Zealand Duchess.
There you go.
Yes. Yes. But this launched you into your performing.
Well, it did in a way, because indeed... Tony inhabited his dukeliness for as long as he was awake, probably when he was asleep as well, for yeah. all I know. He was just the Duke through and through, and it was quite sometimes disconcerting to be with him because of that. But he lived the role fully, and he was much loved, had a wonderful sense of humour, and I'll just give a very brief tale of when Prince Charles... Well, he's King Charles now, visited in the 90s, was on a royal walkabout, saw Tony's hat, came over, regarded Tony from head to foot, plus the members of Alf's Imperial Army on either side, and Charles said to Tony, "Who let you lot out?" I mean, it was just classic for both of them. How about that?
That is a great story. And but it also got you into theatre reviewing.
It did, yes. I began that in about 2016, yes, and yeah, and I work for Theatre View. That's where my reviews are, and I'll drop John Smythe's name in there. You listening, John? John is the manager of Theatre View. It's an extraordinary website which covers every single theatrical production that occurs in New Zealand anywhere at all. Gets reviewed because Theatre View makes sure that somebody says something about it that's useful that goes into print. And John and I go way back to drama club in the Victoria University days. But you see, you can't take theatre out of the person. So here am I reviewing, and I review poetry. I review poetry books as well for the regional news.
Mm.
Little paperback of people, not a little, little newspaper, fortnightly.
And well, I know that you were going to be reviewing. You weren't sure if you were going to be able to make the interview because you thought you might have a commitment
right,
to review.
Right,
but fortunately,
yes.
We were able to snaffle you. And look, Margaret, it has been an absolute joy and a delight to have you with us on B-Side Stories, and because you've got a lot of stories. And if you want to hear some of Margaret's stories in person, then you want to go to the one-woman show that you created. It's got fabulous costumes from a mutual friend.
No, that's the second show.
Oh, that's the second show.
First show.
It's got...
Come and see.
Come and see. Please adjust your G-string. And when is it on?
Fringe Theatre, Fringe Bar, March 3, 4 and 5. At 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
It's not a late night.
Mm-hmm. And you can... and it's a fairly reasonable cover charge or ticket price.
Yes.
And you can start to have some of get a first hand look at or experience of Margaret's adventures in as a performer, as in Europe, as a New Zealander discovering herself and what Europe had to offer. in the late 70s and early 80s. So thank you, Margaret, very much for joining us. Have you anything to add?
No, come to see the show.
Come and see the show. The 3rd, 4th and 5th of March at the Fringe Bar in Allen Street. Well, thank you very much again for joining me, Margaret. Tune in to Community Zone tomorrow for more interesting news and views about Wellington. And B-Side Stories next Tuesday, which will also be more interesting stories from interesting people. Ko Victoria Kueraho, ka kite anō.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.